All right, we started a series last week called Brand New, and we had some really good feedback from our start. Now, because of a technology, we don't have last week, so hopefully if you weren't here, you'll be able to catch up a little this week. All right, so when Jesus showed up about 2,000 years ago, he brought something with him that was just absolutely brand new. It was brand new, and it was the end of something that we had seen and still see even, but throughout history, and it's what we call the temple model, so we're talking Egyptians and you know, the Jews and Assyrians, everywhere you look, Romans, they had this temple model. And the temple model, this is what it is. All right, so in the temple model, what you have is a sacred place. And so you would go to a building. You would go to a place to worship. All right, and it kind of in quotes, sacred. All right, so this is a temple model, sacred place. And then in that sacred place, there would be a sacred text. All right, now that sacred text would be controlled and it would be interpreted by sacred men. It was almost always men. So the sacred text, it would be controlled, it would be interpreted by sacred men. So the sacred men had an incredible power over people, right? And so these sacred men would then tell the sacred followers how to live. And if you don't live that way, then you're going to pay for it. You're going to be punished, all right? And that was the temple model. And so Jesus comes along and he said, we're doing the temple model. This is the old way. I'm bringing something brand new, because there would no longer be a sacred place, a sacred building, because you would be sacred, and you would be sacred. You would be sacred. Every person to your left or your right, front of you, back behind you, would be sacred, all right? And now there would be a sacred text, but it wasn't something that you needed some sacred man to interpret for you. You would have the ability to understand. I mean, of course, it's helpful to have someone that can help you understand, but you would no longer have to go through a sacred man to be able to understand. You would no longer have to go through a sacred man in order to get to God. You would have access through Jesus. All right? And so, not only that, you would also be able to be used by God himself to do his work. It wouldn't just be the sacred man, sacred woman, all right? And so, that's the temple model right there. Well, when Jesus showed up, he said, okay, well, we're doing away with something that's old, and I'm bringing something that's absolutely brand new. Now, the Jews, they flocked to Jesus, all right? Not all of them, but, I mean, they were coming in droves. I mean, they were flocking to Jesus, okay? And not only the Jews, though, but the Gentiles. Gentile, that's someone that's not a Jew. Now, the thing is, remember, the Jews, they had the temple model. They had it for thousands of years. And if there's something, you probably know this in your life. I know this in mine. There's a truth, and it's that old ways die hard. They do. So what we had was people that they accepted the new, but they felt really, really guilty abandoning generation after generation of tradition and all the stuff that they always had to do. They had a hard time. They felt guilty abandoning it, like they were letting down those that had gone before them. And some would just refuse. I'm not giving up my old way for something brand new. I mean, this is what we've done. And if you were to give up the old, then they would think that was something really, really wrong with you. Okay, and then still others, there were some that would say, you know what, I'm just going to take a little bit of the old, I'm going to take a little bit of the new, and I'm going to kind of have both of them. And that seems reasonable, but that's what we're talking about today. So Paul, when Paul heard this, now, Paul, let me tell you a little bit about Paul first. Paul, he was a temple model guy. I mean, he was at the top of the list of temple model guys. I mean, all about the tradition, all about the laws, all about that stuff. I mean, that was him, all right? And so to the point that he was actually hunting Christians, and then God gets a hold of him, turns his heart around, turns his life around, and he embraces the new. And he abandons, he's like, I'm done with the old. I mean, he was like the guy, and he did away with all of the old, and he completely embraced the brand new. Now, Paul had a big problem with anyone who actually tried to take the old and the brand new and blend them together. So Paul, he started traveling around, and one of the places he went to was a place called Galatia, all right? And so Galatia was a Roman province. It's in modern-day Turkey. And so he's starting churches, and so he goes and tells them, right, we've been set free. I mean, it's not about the law. It's about love now. All right, so he would explain, and he would start churches, and then he would move on. And then he found out that there were people that were coming along behind him, and they were saying, yeah, I mean, the new is great, open to everybody, but, you know, they started trying to blend the old with the new. All right, and so these other people that would follow him, they would say, look, we're Jews, and I mean, we've been God's people for a really long time, And so God kind of let us know his plan, and we didn't really get it, but now we get it. And so, you know, Jesus has come along, and we're fully embracing Jesus. And the good news is, if you're not a Jew, if you're a Gentile, then you can also, I mean, this is great news, you can also embrace Jesus. But you have a little bit of catching up to do. I mean, because understand, we've been God's people. We're talking thousands of years, and all of that stuff, you know, that we did, I mean, you can't just really walk in, do none of it, and have that relationship with God. He goes, and so there's a few things that you're going to have to do. And so for you guys, one of the things that you're going to have to do is going to require just a little bit of surgery. Circumcision. And so, I mean, you can imagine. So these people were not understanding, because Paul said, we've been set free. We don't have to follow all that stuff. These other people were coming along. Yeah, it's open to you, but you have to catch up a little bit. You have to do some of the stuff that we did, you know, and that way, you know, you'll be kind of caught up. You'll be kind of among God's people, and then you can follow him. And it's all for you. So Paul, he hears this, and he wants to put the smack down on him. He's not happy, because here they are coming along, and they're trying to change the message of Jesus. All right? They're taking the old, they're taking the new, and they're trying to blend both of them. And so Paul warns them, and really with what he's warning them about, it's really a warning to us, because the temple model is still alive today in a very big way. All right, so we're going to be in the book of Galatians. So Paul, he writes a letter after he heard about these people that were coming up. All right, so let's start off in Galatians 5:1. And if you brought your Bible, you can do that. If you have your phone app, you can do that as well. All right, so I love it. I've always loved this. I mean, ever since the first time that I read it, I remember it well. So it says, for freedom, Christ has set us free. And this is like an exclamation point type of thing. It's like, you know, Mel Gibson and Braveheart. Freedom. For freedom, Christ has set us free. Stand firm, therefore, and do not submit again to a yoke of slavery. We'll leave that up for a second. So here's what Paul's saying. He's like, you've been set free. Don't live again like you're still imprisoned by sin and by all those laws. You've been set free. It's like you were in a cell, you were in prison, the gate has flown open, the door's opened up, the chains have fallen off. Don't live where you once were. Walk out, be free, live free. He says, don't submit again to the yoke of slavery. Don't let yourself be enslaved again. You've been set free. So this is what we're going to talk about next week, but I want to say one thing about this. Think about your faith. If you feel your faith handcuffs you, if you feel like it's a burden on you, if you feel like walking in faith just weighs on your shoulders, there is something really, really wrong. Don't miss next week. That's what we're going to talk about. All right, let's get to verse 2. It goes, look, I, Paul, say to you that if you accept circumcision, and we'll leave this up to you, Christ will be of no advantage to you. He's going to be of no value to you. So if you accept that you have to do something, then Christ is no value to you. So circumcision, this was exclusively for the Jews. I mean, they had a unique relationship with the Lord. It was for them. And the new way was all about, it was for everybody. It was not just for the Jews. And so Paul's saying, look, if you accept circumcision, then what you're accepting is that you have to do something in order to have a right relationship with God. And to stay that relationship, you have to just keep on doing and doing and doing. And if that's what you're accepting, then Christ is of no advantage to you. Okay, remember, let's leave that verse up. Remember, we talked again about the temple model last week, if you were here, and they had so many things to do. You may know of the Ten Commandments, but there was also 600 plus laws that they had to follow. And if you follow them, you're right with God. Now, they realized very quickly they could not follow all the rules. They could not do it. And so when they would fall short, when they would sin, God is a righteous God, and because he's a righteous God, there has to be a penalty for sin, because he wouldn't be a righteous judge if he looked away You know, like imagine a judge down here just looking away from wrongdoing and saying, "Nope, don't see it." He can't. He would no longer be right. And so there has to be a punishment. So people would fall short. They knew they would fall short. So something had to pay for their sin. And so they would sacrifice animals. They would sacrifice something else to sacrifice to pay for their sin. Now, a big value, a big advantage of the Old Testament, what we call the Old Testament, was the fact that it pointed to Jesus. It helped people know you can't live up to it. You can't live perfectly right before God. You can't do it. You need someone to save you. And yes, you need someone else to sacrifice for your sin. So Jesus comes along and he lived the law perfectly. He fulfilled it. He did it. We couldn't. He did it. And so he didn't have to sacrifice for his own sin. So he went ahead and sacrificed for all of our sin, for all people, all place, all time. And so a big advantage of Christ is when you believe and you trust, you've been set free from your sin, from the power of sin. Sure, we still sin, but we're learning to live in our freedom. So a big advantage of Christ is you have been set free, but if you accept circumcision, you're acting like that never happened. You're acting like you still have to do things in order to make yourself right with God. And if that's the case, then Christ is of no advantage to you anymore. You're believing in works. And so the thing about works is when we think that we have to earn it, when we think that we have to do this, and it's a have to, it's never a want to, we have to do this, we have to do this, then it's about works, it's not about grace anymore. And so the thing about grace, I'll tell you what grace is, and a lot of you already know. But works is when we are trying to earn something. So we work for it, so we earn it. We work for a paycheck, so we earn it. We're trying to earn our relationship with God, and we can't do that. Grace is when we get something we just do not deserve. And so these people that came along, these Jews that came along after Jesus were saying, "I got it. It's all about freedom. The old is gone, the new has come. That's fantastic. But you still have to be circumcised, right?" I mean, that's only right. I mean, that makes sense, right? We should do that. Said, no. It's not about doing. It's about what's been done. It's already been accomplished, all of it. It's no longer about law. It's all about love. And so they're missing the point. It won't be up here, but there's a verse in Romans 11, and it says, look, if it is by grace, if it's a gift, a free gift, then it's no longer on the basis of works. Because if it is, grace is no longer grace. All right, verse 3. Because I testify again to every man who accepts circumcision that he's obligated to keep the whole law. He's saying, look, if you want to do it that way, you can't just do one. You can't say, well, I'll do that. You have to go all the way. You got to do the Ten Commandments, the 600 plus laws. If you're going to go that way, you have to completely go that way. And once again, you go that way, Christ has no advantage of you. All right, verse 4. I mean, this is serious stuff. He's saying, look, you're severed from Christ. You're cut off. You who would be justified by the law, you've fallen away from grace. So justify, let me tell you what that is. It's one of those words that we think we kind of know, but to clarify it, to be justified means you're being declared not guilty. All right? And so when Jesus died on the cross for our sin, when he did that for you, he did that for me. And when we believe and we trust, well, then what happens is that we are declared not guilty. And his righteousness, well, that's put on us. But again, if you don't get that, then it's like you are absolutely just cut off because you're still trying to earn it. You're forgetting that it's a gift. There's nothing you can do to earn a relationship with God. It's a gift. So just imagine that. Okay, imagine that one of you been around since like the beginning. So you came up to me after one of our gatherings. You said, man, you've been doing this for a good while with our church. And so, you know, we have a gift for you. And I'd be like, man, you don't have to give me a gift. What is it? You know, still, I want to know. And they're like, okay, well, we got this gift card for you to Cabela's. And I'd be like, oh, I love me some Cabela's. You got me a gift card? Well, maybe I'll accept this gift. That's really nice of you. And then he said, well, that's great. And then I look on the outside and it's always helpful when you put the amount on the outside so you don't have to guess or call the number. You say, it was $500, right? This is not a real situation, but right now I'm almost misting up. I'm so excited at even the thought of it. So, but I would be like, oh, this is great. I have a leader meeting later, but I'm going to cancel it because I'm going to Cabela's. I'm going to get me something. I'd be so excited, but and be like, what a gift. I mean, I so appreciate that. But then imagine I just said, well, how much do you want me to give you for it? And I'd be like, what are you talking about? I said, well, I mean, it's $500. So do you want me to pay $500? I mean, it wasn't in the budget. I wasn't planning on doing this, but do you want me, I mean, $500, does that kind of even things out? And he doesn't really make any sense. I said, well, okay. And you say, well, you would tell him. He's like, no, it's a gift. It's like, yeah, I get that. $450? But no. See, this is what we do with our faith. We try to earn something that is a free gift. So I gotta still be circumcised, right? I mean, I gotta read the Bible every day, right? I mean, I have to give, right? I have to serve, right? I mean, I gotta earn it. I mean, I got this gift. Wow. But I mean, I still have to do stuff. I mean, I just can't just not do stuff. Hopefully, you kind of sense where this is going, because we deal with this. We put this weight on our shoulders, like I'm messing it up. I'm blowing it. I'm not keeping up my end of the bargain. Okay, let's go ahead and skip verse six. Let's go to verse six, because this verse is interesting. It caused a lot of problems. Maybe not the verse, but the truth behind it. So it was, in Christ Jesus, neither circumcision nor uncircumcision counts for anything. So doing, not doing, doesn't count. Only faith working through love. Let's leave that up. For in Christ, neither, so doing and not doing, that doesn't count for anything. I'm not saying it has no value, but it's just, look, this, what we're talking about, it doesn't count for anything. The only thing that counts is faith working through love. I mean, just look at that. See, right away it starts, but you have to do something. I mean, really, you can't just not do anything, right? We're following the track with Paul. So Paul, you can imagine how people reacted. It's like, I mean, look at what we've done as Jews. We did all that. You know, Paul, you led. You were one of those sacred men. You know all this stuff that you had to do. And we're just going to let them in? All the Gentiles? We're just going to stop doing everything that we were instructed by God himself to do? Just let it go? He's saying, yep. You know, doing, not doing doesn't count. The only thing that counts is faith working itself through love. Here's the thing. If you have faith, now it's important. You have to, we're talking about people that actually have faith. You have to have come to a point in your life where you've looked at your life for whatever reason. You feel convicted by your sin. And then you hear about Jesus. You hear what he did for you. And for whatever reason, you feel like sorrowed by your sin to the point where you want to do something about it. And you can't even do it. What are you going to do about it? And so, but you see Jesus. You find out he died for you. He died for every sin, every thought, all the stuff that you've done that wrecked, the stuff that nobody knows about, the stuff that if you could go back and change it, you would. All those things. He died for all of that. All right? So if you believe and you trust, you looked at that and say, I've been going my own way. And I'm going to repent. I'm going to turn around. And I'm going to go God's way. If you have done that, you got to hear this. Because some of you have a weight on your shoulder still. If you have done that, then forever, you and God are good. Forever. There is no taking it away. On your best day, you're good with God. On your worst day, you and God are good. Are there consequences for sin and all? Sure. But as far as a relationship with God, you are good. You never have to worry about it again. I'm just going to do my best. He's not Santa. Oh, hopefully I'm more nice than naughty. By the way, if it were that way, that's kind of the law, we wouldn't win out. Our thought life alone would mess us up. I'm speaking for myself on that one, I know. But you're good. Forever. So you don't have to worry about it. I'm just going to do my best. I'm going to hope for the best. I'm trying to earn it. You don't have to. Never again. You're good. So you have the vertical completely taking care of itself. And so the only thing you have to do, doesn't matter what do and not do, the only thing that counts is faith working through love. You have the horizontal, the vertical taken care of, rather, and then after that, what do you have to do? is love. You're wondering what you have to do? You love. We talk about it. Love God. To narrow it down, love God, love others. It's pretty simple. Let's look at verse 7. Because you were running well. Who hindered you from obeying the truth? He's saying, who messed with your thinking? I mean, you had it going, and then you started thinking wrong. And this goes to our thinking. Our thinking is huge. Romans 12 talks about this. We have to renew our mind. We have to think in the right way. Because whatever we think, it leads to what we believe. And what we believe, we live out. Our thinking is crucial. Now, we're not gonna hit verse 9, but it gives an example that explains that if you try to take the old, even a little bit of the old, just circumcision, okay, for us, just, you know, I have to, you fill in the blank, and you bring that into the new Jesus model, then it begins to work itself through the entire Jesus model sort of way, the brand new way. A little bit of the old way messes with the new. You can't blend the two. You have to embrace the new and completely abandon the old where you think you have to earn it. So Paul puts people on alert. I mean, Paul, he's very serious about this. He, for those that are saying that, you know what, so you're saying you have to be circumcised? You know what Paul says? I mean, Paul means business. Look, let's look. It's verse 12. I think that's the next one. Oh, you want to go ahead? You want circumcision? Then I wish those who would unsettle you, they would go all the way and emasculate themselves. I mean, if you don't know what that means, I'm not going to explain it. I'm just saying that's not good. He means business. He goes, you don't even know where you're headed. You don't even know what I'm talking about. He goes, those people, that's got to come to an end. What I'm talking about is serious. I mean, this is almost like, students, you might be a little frustrated at this part. I just know. This is like a parent, because with every student, there come those times where they want to head in a direction, the parent's like, no. And the parents often handle it wrong. Again, speaking from experience. But they're saying no. And what the student says is, you don't understand. You don't understand how I feel. You don't understand my desire. You don't understand. You just don't understand. And here's what students don't understand. You don't understand that parents understand more than you understand. You, as flawed as we as parents are, and boy, we're pretty messed up, we know. They are not saying, I never did, so you shouldn't. What they are saying is, that mistake you're making that you don't think I understand, I've made it 20 times. I know exactly where you're headed. I know where you're headed so much that I still feel the scars from when I did the same thing. I'm not trying to kill your fun. I'm not trying to kill your relationships. It's none of that. I get it more than you understand. I get it, but you don't understand. And so Paul's saying the same thing. You don't know where you're headed. You're trying to do the old. You don't understand. I've been there. I'm never going back. You don't want it. It brings pain. It brings suffering. It brings arrogance. It brings pride. You do not want it. Let me give a flip side. And parents might not be too happy with me on this one. So the student, they don't have as much experience on stuff, and so even with arguing and being able to fully form, I mean, a lot of what they really want to say. But a lot of times they'll give you something. And they may not know it completely out of experience, but they have this feeling. And so where they say something like, you know what? You just work too much. You need to put down the phone, Facebook. They have a feeling inside of them that knows where you're heading if you keep on doing that. So, enjoy. That's for you guys. But I know what it's like. I'm a parent, but I have parents. But Paul is saying, you don't want, I know the feeling. I know the feeling of feeling so guilty because how I live my life and feeling like I'll just never measure up. I know the feeling of not being able to stop sinning. I've said 1,000 times, I will never do that again. I know I've tried harder, failed harder, more times than you can count. I've accepted the free gift. I am never going back. And so this might lead to a question. Well, does this mean that we can just do whatever we want? It's a good question. All right, so let's put people into categories. And I don't categorize people, but you'll know what I mean when I do this. And we don't really categorize. We're non-denominational, all this. But you know, the two big categories of Catholic and you have Protestant. And so this question of can we just do anything we want, you see it in both. I have experience with both, I know. And so in the way you see it with someone who is a Catholic background, this is not all Catholics by any stretch, but you see this. It's like, man, sure, I can basically, I can do that. I'll just go to confession on Sunday. I'll be good. So basically, I can just do what I want, right? I just hope nothing happens between now and Sunday. You know, that's really kind of the thinking. And for the Protestant, I'm good. I mean, everything's been forgiven anyway. So, I mean, I can do that. I'm all asking for forgiveness again, but this is how we think, our thinking. So, and whenever I say you, I mean me as well, talking to me. So if you feel, I can, so I will, it just means you don't get it. So the thing about when the Lord actually changes our life, when he does that, we no longer do because we have to. We do because we want to. I mean, and we don't do it perfectly by any, no. But something is changing us where we actually desire what God desires and not what we desire. And it causes a lot of inside of us. But there's something in us that says, I mean, yeah, I can. I mean, technically, because I'm forgiven, but I don't want to. I don't want my way. I want God with what he has done for me. I know that God's way is better in every way. So I want God's way. Now, I think a lot of us can think to ourselves, but I just can't. I mean, I want to follow him, all this type of stuff. So that's temple model thinking. I can't. And what we're thinking is because I'm not a sacred man. I'm not a pastor. I'm not one of those more holy types. I can't. That's temple model thinking. Jesus, and that's, people resist it. Our whole premise of this series had to do with the temple model. People resist it. People don't like the church because of the temple model. I'm not going to go to some place here, someone tell me how I need to live my life. I don't need to hear that. You know, they're going to try to control me, tell me what to do. All those hypocrites, that's the temple model. And it creeps in today to the church. We need to fight it off. But I was just thinking, I can't. I mean, it's something I just can't. It's just not me. Look, if you have believed, and that's where it starts. If you have believed and you trusted, then the Bible, we don't exactly understand how this all happens, but he's put the Holy Spirit in us in some way. And the Spirit is what leads. The Spirit is what empowers. The Spirit is what strengthens. The Spirit helps us understand. The Spirit says, I don't have it in me. Yeah, you do, because you have the Spirit in you. Let's look at verse 13. You were called to freedom, brothers. Also means the sisters in the house, not just the brothers. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh. What does that mean? It means to fulfill all these desires you have that you know go against what God desires for you. Don't use the freedom you do have, because it is freedom, as an opportunity for the flesh. But through love, serve one another. Let's leave that up there, Chris. You do have freedom. It's confirmed. You have it. You could do what you want, technically, but don't use that freedom as an opportunity to fulfill these desires that are not of the Lord. It's not good for you. It's not a rule. It's I know for you. I know what you need. I have it for you. And this is the way you go. Don't go the other way. Don't go the other way. I love you so much. Let me guide you. Let me lead you. I mean, let me love on you. And then go and do that for others. So don't use it for that. But here's what I want you to use it for. I want you, through love, to serve one another. Man, that's... All right, so it used to be that, I mean, all the laws, Ten Commandments, all the 600 laws, that's what you had to do. Now, it's simple. You love. You love God, you love others. That's what you do. All right. Now, it's very, very simple. Because, again, you don't have to memorize all that. Just to memorize it, let alone do all the other ones. It's very simple, but it's more demanding. And I'm going to prove it. All right, I mentioned on Facebook that I was going to give you a question that, I mean, if you're serious about your faith, I don't know that you can forget this question. I just don't. When you first hear it, there's something in the question, though. So I want you to think right now of your tensions in your life, the tensions in your life. You have tensions regarding relationships, regarding money, regarding the church, maybe, regarding giving and serving and just living with integrity. And you have tensions on things you should say no to. You have tensions with things you should say yes to. You have tension with people that you'd almost classify as an enemy. I mean, there's tensions with the family and there's tensions with your time. All right, so I'm going to leave this. I want you to think. So you got to do some work on this one. I want you to think about those tensions in your life, and I want you to try to think about them in a way that gets that tension going. All right, so in the relationships, because you know how that can be, when you're absolutely right and you know that you're right, you don't just think you're right, you actually know that you're right. You know that the other person really should be coming up to you to ask you to forgive them. Think about those relationships. All right. Think about the church. You know, as the church, the ecclesia, the congregation, the people, you know, we're called to do life with one another. We're called to serve one another, to love one another. We're called to give as the church. Think about those tensions. I want you to just feel those tensions. All right. Think about those decisions you have to make. And see, we think, well, here's my faith, here's my life. How do I live out both? No, they're together. We only have one life, one faith, right? So you have that. Think about, again, I'm just letting it sit. I want you to think about those relationships. I want you to think about all those things that you just, I don't want to do it. I feel the Lord tugging on my heart. I don't want to do it. I can't do it. Okay. So when you hit that, and do this week, and then I think it might stay with you longer. When you hit those moments, or you feel the Lord tugging on your heart to do not what you prefer to do, but something else. This question gets beyond your preferences. Sometimes it gets clouded, but this gets beyond our preferences, beyond our biases, beyond our anger, beyond our desires. It gets to the heart of the issue. Again, okay, so think about those things. When you hit that moment and that tension, and you're thinking, what do I do? Ask yourself this question, Chris. What does love require of me? So, leave it up, please. So, you're absolutely right. Maybe it's not a situation. Maybe it's just an overall relationship and how you live it and how that other person lives it. And you're the one that ultimately, not always right, but you're ultimately right. All right, maybe it's the situation. I mean, this is some difficult stuff. And so, you know what? I'm justified to be angry at them. You know, I should be. I don't want to forgive. They don't deserve forgiveness. Look how they live. Look at what they've done. Look how they treat me. So we have a lot of preferences. We have a lot of biases. We have a lot of anger, right? You want to know what cuts through the heart of it? Saying, but what does love require of me? I think I need to reconcile. I need to fix the relationship.
They should be the one.
What does love require of you? Not what does love require of them? Think about our church. I mean, everything from serving. It's like, okay, my life is busy. I'm fatigued. All those things. When it comes to serving, I want to just relax. I'm a leader. I can help this church, but I lead elsewhere. I know what I prefer, but what does love require of me? That cuts through everything. I want to give. Most don't want to start giving. I don't want to give. There's the mission, though. I mean, there's the mission, and, you know, I mean, it'll just be taken care of, and I didn't grow up giving like that anyways, or this church did that, that guy ran off with that secretary, and they, you know, there was fraud involved. Not that, what does love require of everybody else that you came up? What does love require of you? Love of God and love of others. Inviting people. Just awkward. I don't know how to, what to say. What if I get rejected and they think I'm some sort of Bible thumper person? And I mean, I have my preferences, but I mean, there's, most people don't have a church they love. What does love require of me? How do I love God and how do I love others? And again, in that relationship, I know what I prefer. I think love requires grace, giving them something they don't really deserve. And why? Because my Father in heaven gave me something I didn't deserve either. Give them forgiveness. Give them understanding. You know, I talked to parents about their children being here. Not only them, but every just being here on a Sunday. And I realized, I'm not talking out of town, I'm just talking about, you know, get up in the morning, I just don't feel, I'm exhausted and all this. We gather on Sunday as the church, the one time that we all gather together. And there's an impact when you're here to you. Not always like, oh, I loved it. No, it's a process. It's a process. Over time, things begin to happen. But then also, like our kids, your student, your child being here makes a difference in their life, but it makes a difference in the lives of the other kids that are there. Sometimes I'm exhausted. Sometimes I don't. But what does love require of me? You find this week that situation that you just don't want. Fill in the blank. You ask yourself that question. I guarantee you can't just shrug it off. After we ask that question, I believe we'll get an answer. And then all that is needed after that is the courage to do it. I don't have it in me. Spirit's in you. Spirit's got a lot of courage. The Spirit has it. I want you to imagine, as we close, I want you to imagine what it would be like if you individually, and then we as a church, lived our life asking that question, what does love require of me? It just might change the world. It would change somebody's world, and I guarantee you this, part of the world that it would change would be your world. Let's pray.